Today's daf is Bava Basra daf Nun Beis. We left off on daf Nun Aleph Amud Beis. We were 5 lines from the bottom at Tanu Rabbanan. So says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Mekablin Piktonos, Lo Min Anashim, Lo Min Avadim, Lo Min HaTinokos. A person cannot accept a pikadon from women, from Avadim, or from children. And the assumption is that all these people, if they have something, you have to be suspicious that maybe it doesn't really belong to them. Maybe it was stolen. Right? So Rashbam says, Min Anashim, Dikal Memar Ganvam Labalehem, Ladunehem, that the women and the Avadim, you have to assume that they stole it from their husbands and masters, respectively. The Tinokos Nami, Shema Ganvam, Beis Balavayas. And the Tinokos also, you have to worry that maybe they stole it from the house of the Balabai Shem Darmisham, the Balabais, whoever they live by, whoever their caretaker is. Vasu the Sayaya Yedei Ovrei Avera. And by accepting Pikadon from them, you are aiding them in doing their Avera. And if you don't take it from them, so they're going to see they have nothing to do with it, they can't give it away, so then they're going to just give it back to the rightful owner. So by you refusing to take it from them, hopefully they'll do the right thing and bring it back to the rightful owner. That's why we're not allowed to take pikdonos from these people. However, kibel mina isha, if you were mekabel pikdon from a woman, which you weren't supposed to do, but you did it anyway, yachsir liisha, you do return it to her. The imesa yachsir lebaila, and only if she dies, you would instead return it to the husband. Meaning, you're going to return the pikdon to her if you take it from her, because you have no proof that she's a ganav, and you can't just automatically assume that a person is a ganav. To be cautious and not take a pikadon from her in the first place, so you're not doing anything wrong by not taking a pikadon from her. But if you already took it from her and then you don't give it back to her, you give it back to the wrong person, you can't just assume that she's a ganav. But once she's dead, then you can return it to her husband. Because even if someone had given her this money, al-manas, that her husband shouldn't have reshus to use the money, once she dies, her husband is the rightful owner of it anyway. The husband yarshins her anyway. So if she's dead, then you give it back to the husband. Kibal min eved, if you were mekabel the bikadon from an eved, yachsir le'eved, you give it back to the eved. Again, you don't automatically assume that the person's a ganav. V'meis yachsir le'rabo. And if the eved dies, then instead of giving it back to the eved himself, you give it back to the master of that eved. As the Rashbam explains, the mistama kol masha kana eved kana rabo, because mistama, whatever the eved owns, the master acquires. V'nir be'enai, says the Rashbam, and it appears duhu adin im nishtachrer ha'eved va'achar kach meis yachsil rabo, that the same would be true if the eved were freed and then he died, you would still return it back to the master. Because we don't look at whether he was an eved at the time that he died, rather we look at whether he was an eved at the time that he gave you the pikadon. So if when he gave you the pikadon, he was an eved, ustam avadim gazlanim hein, and as opposed to by women, where we don't assume stam women are ganavim, right? You don't take a pikadon from them, but you can't make the assumption that she's a ganav. By an eved, we make the assumption that a stam eved is a gazlan. And that's why by the woman the halacha would be different. If the woman gets divorced and then dies, you would not return it to the husband, because you don't automatically assume that the woman stole it. Instead, you would give it to the yorshim of the woman. Because once she's divorced, the husband is no longer the yoresh of the woman. So that's a fundamental difference between the eved and the isha. Whereas by both of them, you're not supposed to take a pikadon, and if you do, you return it to them, and if they die, you return it to their husband / master. But when it comes to if the relationship with the husband / master was severed prior to the death, that's where there's going to be a difference in the halacha, and that difference in the halacha is based on a difference in the reality of whether we assume that they are gazlanim or not. That a woman we do not assume is a gazlan, automatically an eved we do assume is a gazlan. Kibal min ha-katan, what if you took a pikadon from a katan, which again, you're not supposed to do, but you did it anyway. So yasal segula, what do? You make a segula out of it. The Gemara is going to explain how exactly you make a segula, what kind of segula you make when you mekabel a pikadon from a katan. So the Gemara is going to get to it, what it means to be yasal segula. But anyway, yasal segula, that's what you do. And v'meis yachzu li'arshav, and if the katan dies, so then you return the item to his yarshim, meaning you can't return it to him. So instead of returning it to him, why can't you return it to him? Because he's not going to know how to watch it anyway. It's like throwing it in the garbage to return it to him. He's just going to be, as Rashbam says, it's like throwing it in the garbage to return it to the katan. So what do? You make something that's going to be there for him later on when he's old enough to know how to watch over it. Right now, he's not old enough. Fine, good, that's all those three halachos. Now, says the Braisa, V'kulin sha'amru b'shas misasun, shel ploni hein, yasa kapirushan. If the Eved, the Isha, the Katan, any of these people say, at the time that they're dying, they say, by the way, you should know that this belongs to so-and-so, then you give it to the person that they identified. Even though typically when they die, you would give it to the husband, the master, right, the Yarshim. But if they say that, no, we got this as a Bikadon, we were supposed to watch it for such and such a person, and they identify a person, so you have to give it to that person. They are believed at the time of their death, because normally when a person is dying, they want to make right by everything, and they want to say things that are true, and make sure that the money that they have is given back to the rightful owners. But v'im lav, yasa perish l'pirushan. If not, we make our own perish to what they said. So what does that mean, if not? If what not? If they didn't say anything at Shas B'Sasan? If you don't believe them at Shas B'Sasan? What's v'im lav? So the Rashbam has three potential pshatim. First one is the one that he likes. V'im lav, yasa perish l'pirushan, says Rashbam, kilomar v'im lo mehemen lahu nifkat shebikadon shalos aplonihu, elo shel bailim shalemhu. Let's say the woman is dying, and she says, oh yeah, this belongs to Reuven, and you don't believe her. You don't think it really belongs to Reuven. You think she stole it from her husband. On her deathbed, she's saying it belongs to Reuven. Why would she say that on her deathbed if she stole it from her husband? So says Rashbam, Umitoch busha einam rotzum lomar shul shel bailim. And it's only because she's embarrassed that she doesn't want to say that it belongs to her husband. So she doesn't want it to be remembered. She doesn't want it to say on her tombstone, here lies this woman who was a ganav and a gazlan. Right? So she doesn't want to look like a ganav and a gazlan on her deathbed. So yasa nifkad perish acher leperusho. So then it's up to you, who took the pikadon, to come up with a different pshat to what she's saying, meaning she yaksul balein shalelavlo saploni. Not you make up your own pshat, rather you assume that it's she doesn't want to look like a gazlan, so she's making up some third party that the item really belongs to, and it does not belong to that third party. Rather, who does it belong to? Who we would normally assume it belongs to? Belongs to her husband, and you give it back to her husband. That's pshat number one. And that's going to fit very beautifully with the next line of Gemara, which is going to be about making a perush the perusho. Fine. However, it says Rashbam, there are two other pshatim as well. Yesh mefarshim v'imlav yasa perush the perusho. What does that mean? Kilomar imlo pirshu b'shas misa. If they never said anything at the time of their death, then yasa perish lema shehim hayutzrich lefarish shiachsel baleen. That's what it means. If they didn't say anything at the time of their death, then we make our own perish. What does it mean? We make our own perish. We do what we would normally assume where it really came from, which is her husband. So you give it back to her husband if she didn't say anything. Now, while that makes a lot of sense that that's what you would do, it doesn't make a lot of sense that the Braisa would waste an extra line on telling us that that's what you would do. Says Rashbam v'lo nehira. Din kein haynu resha. We just said that. We just said that if a woman dies and doesn't tell us anything, you give it to her husband. So now we need to say again that if she dies without saying anything, you give it to her husband. Right? We just said v'meisu yachsel ba'alein v'meis yachsel rabo demayri b'shemes v'lo pirish l'mi yachsir. The whole ratio was talking about a case where the person dies and never told us who to give it back to. V'kamer the yachsel ba'alein betrays him nilamali. So it said give it back to the ba'alein. So why would it need to tell me the same halacha twice? So while this second pshat makes a lot of sense halachically, it makes too much sense halachically. We already learned it in the Reisha. It doesn't make any sense to repeat it. Third pshat is based on an alternate girsa. V'isvarim dekasav behu v'ika da'amri yasa perish l'perusho. They add in the words ika da'amri that kolomar lo yasa kamasha pirshu hein el yachsa l'baylim. This is going on the case where the woman does say, she does identify a third party, and she says it belongs to that third party, but Ika da Amri say, don't listen to her. Rather, you always make perush the perusho, right? You always give it back to the husband. Says the Rashbam v'lo nihira, dimkein rav da Amri mehemelach damar kamal no kresha v'lo kasefa. The problem with this pshat is that it doesn't fit in with the story that we're about to tell, because Rav is going to paskin in the story that we're about to tell against this pshat, because this pshat is saying, don't listen to anything she says. It doesn't matter what the woman said on her deathbed, just give it back to her husband. That's all you got to worry about. Just make sure it gets back to her husband. So that doesn't fit with the following story. Says the Gemara, Debitu de Rabba Barbachana, the wife of Rabba Barbachana, Kika Shachva, when she was dying, Amra Hani Kipi de Marta Ubnei Barta. She said, these earrings that I have belong to Marta, who's a person, and Bnei Barta is family, right, his grandchildren. Asal Khamed Rav, so they went to Rav, they weren't sure what to do. Right here, Rabbi Bar Chana's wife on her deathbed told her husband, Rabbi Bar Chana, these earrings that I have, you never bought them for me, they belong to so-and-so, and she identified people. So Asal Khamed Rav, he went to Rav, Amalei, Imehemnalach, Asal Kapirusha. So Rav said, look, if you trust her, then do exactly what she said, then give it to the third party that she identified, to Marta and to the Bnei Barta of Marta, right? Give it to the people that she had identified. Now that was the part that bothered the Rashbam, right? The Rashbam said the third pshat being that whatever she says, don't listen to a word of it and just give it to the husband doesn't fit with this line of the story, because over here Rav is saying, Rav is telling Rabbi Bar Chana, if you believe your wife, keep it for you. If you believe your wife, don't keep it for yourself, even though you're the husband. Give it to the people that she identified. And the difference is that normally when something, meaning one could have answered that kasha of the Rashbam, that there's a big difference between the two cases. If a woman on her deathbed tells some random person, namely the person that she gave a pikadon to, that pikadon that you're holding on to belongs to a third party, and she does not identify it as belonging to her husband, so we're going to say, you know what, maybe it really does belong to her husband, she doesn't want it to look like a ganav. Over here, the husband obviously had no clue. The person she had spoken to on her deathbed was the husband. He had no idea if it belonged to him or not, for whatever reason. Maybe he was such a rich man, he had such a large Yerusha or whatever, that he couldn't keep track of all the jewelry that he had in his house. So he had no idea if it belonged to him or didn't belong to him. So in that case, she's likely not saying this because she doesn't want to appear like a ganav. She's not going to appear like a ganav, meaning she's talking to her husband. She's saying it's a question of, she didn't give it to a third party, she didn't give it to somebody else as a pikadon. She didn't try to take it and give it away to somebody else. Right? It was obviously something that was around the house that she was allowed to use. It's a question of whether it was hers or whether someone had given it to her to watch over. So the concern doesn't seem to be the same. But anyway, so he said, if you trust her, do what she says. V'lo asa perush l'perusha. If you don't trust her, then you can. If you don't believe what she said on her deathbed, then you can make a perush l'perusha and basically keep it for yourself because you're the husband. V'ikad amri hachiyamala. I'amidolach asa kapirusha. Some say that no, Rav's psak was I'amidolach. If you estimate that everything fits, then do what she says. V'ilo asa perish lepirusha. Otherwise, you make your own pshat. Now, what does it mean I'amidolach? What does it mean everything fits? You evaluate. What does that mean? So Rashbam is two pshatim. Number one, I'amidolach osam sheomer shem shalahem im ashirim heim v'ru'in lahafkid kipi v'shar chafetzim asa k'perusha v'achzirim lahem. If the people that she's claiming they belong to, this third party that she's identifying, if they're a wealthy bunch, they're a wealthy family, and therefore it's possible that they own such beautiful earrings, so fine, then do what she said and give it back to them. Right? And if not, then you keep them. Inami, another pshat in Yamidalach is not whether they're wealthy enough, but rather Yamidalach ishtecha sheyeshla oavim shenasun lamamam amna shalayel chachelik bo. Meaning, if you estimate that your wife has relationships with people who would likely give her jewelry, amnas that you should have no chelik in that jewelry, then you can trust her that this in fact happened. But if your wife never spoke to anybody, she never had any friends, she never had anyone who would ever give her anything, and it just doesn't seem to make sense in your mind that someone would give her something, that anyone would give her jewelry, so then don't trust her, you just keep it for yourself. Then asa perush the perusha. Fine. Two dots. Vayter in the Gemara. Min hakatan yaseh lo segula. So we said, what happens if you got the pikadon from a katan? So then you should be yaseh lo segula. You should make a segula with the pikadon. Now, what is the segula that you make? So that's going to be the Gemara's issue over here, right? Min hakatan yaseh lo segula. Says the Gemara, my segula. What kind of segula? So if Chista amar sefer Torah. Rav Chista says the segula that we're talking about is a sefer Torah, that that's something that's going to be there for him later on in life. And Rabbi Baruch Huna Amar Dikla Da'achlo Mine Tamri. Now you plant a dekel tree, and he'll be able to eat the dates from the dekel tree, and that's the segula that you make, right? Da'achlo Mine says Rosh Bram Hakatan Tamri VaKeren Kayim. Right, while he's a child, he'll be able to eat the dates, and the tree will always be there for him when he grows up as well. But don't just invest in a business, because investments go sour sometimes. You want something that you want to guarantee that it's going to be there for him as he gets older. Right? That's the idea of Sefer Torah, the Dekel tree. Now the Ritva writes that it's Lav Dafka Sefer Torah. Could be any Sefer also. And he says it's also Lav Dafka Dekel tree. Any kind of tree that produces fruits on, yearly, and the child's going to be able to eat from the fruits. So what do you care that what kind of tree it is? It doesn't have to be a Dekel tree. However, the Chassam Sofer says that it has to be a Sefer Torah. Other Svarim would not be called a Segula. Only a Sefer Torah would. Why? Because Mitzad HaSvari says a Dekel is really much better than a Sefer Torah, because the Keren is going to be is always going to be there, and when the child grows older, the whole tree is going to be right there. And if he doesn't want it, he could sell it and buy whatever he does want. The tree has value. But when it comes to Svarim, you're not allowed to sell the Sefer Torah. The only way you're allowed to sell Svarim is when you're Ola B'Kedusha, right? You could sell a regular Svarim to buy a Chumashim, and a Chumashim to buy a Sefer Torah. Only when you go up in the levels of Kedusha. So and plus, it's not a good business. If you happen to have one, you might be able to sell it, but it's certainly not something where there's a strong market for it. A Dekel tree, you'll always find a buyer. Svarim is not a very good business. So really, a Sefer would seem to be not nearly as good for the child as a Dekel tree. But a Sefer Torah, even though it may not be a good business, and he may not be able to sell it, and he may not be allowed to sell it, but the bottom line is, at the end of the day, every single Jew has a chiyuv to write a Sefer Torah. So if you're going to write a Sefer Torah for this kid, he'll at least have been mekayim his mitzvah, and mela, he'll have that. So the Sefer Torah is going to be worth it for him to have, because he's going to need it for the mitzvah of ksiva Sefer Torah anyhow, which is a chiddush, that he's mekayim the mitzvah of ksiva Sefer Torah this way. He was never mitzvah anyone to write the Sefer Torah for him. He was a katan at the time that it was written. Leads you to believe, makes it sound like, that the mitzvah of ksiva Sefer Torah is not a mitzvah of the ksiva, because at the time of the ksiva he was a katan, right? He was not a bar chiyuva. So it sounds more like the mitzvah of ksiva Sefer Torah is to have a Sefer Torah. The only problem with that is that even if you're Yarshin from your father, you still have to write one Liatzma, you still have to write your own Sefer Torah. So it doesn't sound like it's having a Sefer Torah either. You have to refine exactly what the mitzvah is. So it seems that the mitzvah is having a Sefer Torah that was made for you. but it's lav dafka that it's a mitzvah of you being kosevit, because he's a katan over here, and lav dafka mitzvah of having a sefer Torah, because if you yashu one from your father, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. You need to work out the whole sugya, you see all the relevant gemaras, but anyway, that's just al regel achas. Says the Gemara weiter, v'lo la'av b'nichsei ben, v'lo la'ben b'nichsei av. A father can't have chazaka in his son's property, nor the son in his father's property. Amr of Yosef afil chalku. Even if the son has moved out of the father's house and he's financially independent, still they don't have a chazaka in each other's property. Rava Amr chalku lo. Rava says no. This whole idea of them not having chazaka in each other's property is when the father's still supporting the son. But if they split and the son's financially independent, so then certainly they can have chazaka in each other's property. Then they're just like any other strangers. They're totally financially independent of each other. So Amr of Yirmi Midifti, Avad Rav Papi Uvda chalku lo. Karava. Rav Papi paskind that when they split from each other financially, then they can have a chazaka like Rava, or the Bach has the gersa Rabba. That was Rabba's shita who said chalkulo. Amar Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Ishtayi li Rav Chia mehormiz aradshin, Ishtayi li Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Mishmed Rav Nachum Bar Yaakov, Chalkulo. So Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak says that Rav Chia from Hormiz aradshin told me that Rav Acha Bar Yaakov told him in the name of Rav Nachum Bar Yaakov that Chalkulo, that once they split, then all bets are off. Then you're not going to say they have any special din in terms of Chazaka, and they can be machzik in each other's properties. V'hilchus achal kulo. In fact, that's how we paskin. Tani nami hachi, ben shechalak v'ishto shenizkarsha harein kashar kol adam. We have a brisa that supports that. The brisa says beferish, that once a ben is chalak, once the son becomes financially independent and the wife gets divorced, so once they're separate from each other, they're just like anybody else. They're just like total strangers where they have the ability to have a chazaka. Says mar vayter itmar echon mina achin shayinosim minosim mitachabayis vayonos ashoros yotzin al shemo. Let's say one of the brothers is the one that's in charge of taking care of the estate. And the estate is owned by all the brothers equally, but one of the brothers is the caretaker of the estate. So it's his name on all the documents. He's the one that signs for the estate, and all the shtaros say his name on it. Va'amar, and there's one particular shtar that comes out that has his name on it, like all the shtaros have his name on it. And he says about this one, though, that this isn't part of the estate. Rather, he says, Shalihem, that this belongs to me. This shtar halva that says that someone owes money, it's not money that's owed to the estate, it's money that's owed to me personally. I deserve all of it. Shalihem shenafalim besaviyema. Where did I get it from? I got it as Yerusha from my mother's side of the family. These are brothers who all have the same father, but different mothers. I got it as Yerusha from my mother's side of the family, and therefore none of you, none of the other brothers, have any right to it. So Amar Rav, Rav says, Allah lahaviraya. If he's going to make such a claim that that it belongs to him and none of the other brothers have a right to it, he's got to bring a raya to such a claim. He can't just say, just because it's his name on the shtar, he can't say that it's his. His name is on the shtar, that belongs to all of his brothers also. Ushmul Amar Allah Achna Viraya. Shmuel says, no, it's up to the brothers to bring a raya that it belongs to them. Because Adraba, here's a guy who has a shtar that has his name on it, and he's claiming that a shtar signed by Edim with his name on it belongs to him. What more is he supposed to do? That, as far as we know, that's as good a raya as a person can normally have. A shtar that has their name on it with kasher edim. What more do you want from him? If the brothers want to say that it doesn't belong to him as an individual, but rather it belongs to them collectively, they need to prove that. That's Shmuel Shita. But then Shmuel adds in, Omer Shmuel, Modeli Abba, Shemes ala achan lahavi raya. That Rav himself was moded to me, Shmuel argues, that if he dies, then the brothers have to bring a raya. Meaning, if this brother whose name was on the shtar dies, and his children now are saying, this belonged to our father, and only to our father, so the children are believed, and it's up to the brothers to prove the children wrong. And Shmuel says, not only do I believe that to be the halacha, even Rav would be moded to me. Why does he call Rav Abba? So the Rashbam writes that Rav's real name was Abba. Rav is just a title. The same way we call Rabbi Yehuda Anasi Rebbe, we called Abba Rav. So he was called Rav, but really his name was Abba. It's interesting that Abba was his name, because you find Abba as a title a lot of times also, right? That's a big discussion when we talk about where do you find, at what stage in history did Jews start giving their children two names, multiple names for their children, right? So some pointed, well, look in the Gemara, you have Abba Shaul, Abba Chalafta, Abba, and you realize, why are they all Abbas, right? If the two names, why do they all have, so the Abba, very often, you look Rashi and Shas, very often Abba itself is a title. Right, it's not really a name. It's just saying the great one, or you know, it's a complimentary thing. It's not really a name. It's Mister, whatever. It's some show of respect. So, but anyway, Rav's real name apparently was Abba. It was a name also. His real name was Abba, but they called him Rav just because it was a title that they gave him. But anyway, bottom line is, in our case, Shmuel claims that Rav is moded to him, that if the brother whose name is on the shtar dies, that the other brothers need to prove that it's theirs. So Mask for Rav Papa. Rav Papa asks, what are you talking about? You really think Rav would be moded in that case? What, are we going to make a taina for the children that we wouldn't make for the father? Meaning the children are going to, the father would not be believed to say, this is mine. He would need to bring a raya according to Rav. And now that he's dead, we're going to allow the children to be believed? Doesn't make any sense. Says Rashbam and Tosfos, don't get confused between this and what we've said previously about Ta'anin and Liasmi, meaning in the past we've had a sugya in this parak about children who have a chazak and a property that the father lived in for a day, and we say we make a taina for the yisomim that their father bought it from the original owner. Even though the yisomim don't know how their father got it, we make a taina on their behalf. How can we make a taina on their behalf? The father didn't make this taina. Because over there it's talking about a taina that the father could have made. If the father was alive and he would have said, I bought it from Ploni, and look, now I've had it for 3 years, he's believed, because he has chazak sheishim taina. So the children, we make that taina on their behalf. Over here, it's a taina the father cannot make. A father wouldn't be believed with the taina. Right over here, to say what? The children are going to say, this belonged to our father, he got from Beis Avi Imo, he got from his mother's side of the family. The father's not believed to say that taina, according to Rav. So Rav Papa says, what kind of business is this? That Rav would be moded to you? That for the children, we'd give it to them? Rav once confiscated tailor scissors and svarim of Agadita from Yisomim below Raya without any proof. Because these were things that were commonly lent out. So basically, the Bailam had Edim that these belonged to them, and Rava said, that's it, that's all you need. Because the children were unable to verify that it was given to them as a matana, right? So we make the assumption that it was only lent to them, because these are items that are very commonly lent. So we make the assumption that it was lent to their father, and Rava therefore took it away. And we don't say, no, we're going to make a taina on their behalf. Why do we not make a taina on their behalf? Because if their father made that same taina and he said it's mine, he's not believed. Normally when you hold on to metaltolin, just the fact that you're muchzuk in it makes it yours. So we say, no, if it's something that you know had belonged to somebody else previously, like over here, we have Eidim that belonged to somebody else previously, and it's an item that's very commonly lent to other people, so we're not going to rely on the fact that you have possession. Possession is 9/10 of that law, of the law. But what's that last tenth? That last tenth is in this case, where you know it belongs to somebody else, and it's something that's very commonly lent out. So possession is not going to be indicative of that it belongs to that person. So bottom line, says the Gemara, kasha. So we leave it as a kasha, how could it be that Shmuel thinks Rav would be molded to him, that if the guy dies, that the Yisomim are going to win the case. We leave it as a kasha. How do we paskin? So the Rashbam quotes that Rabbeinu Chananel paskins like Shmuel, that when the guy dies, it's ala achil nahavi raya. Even though Shmuel said Rav agrees to me when the guy dies, and we said we had a kasha on Shmuel, how could you say Rav agrees to you, and how does it even make sense? Still, we're going to paskin like Shmuel. And the Rashbam quotes from the Rach that the reason we paskin like Shmuel is because notice the lashon of the Gemara. The lashon is not tiyufta, rather it's kasha. Whenever it's tiyufta, that means it's a very strong question that there is no answer for, and it's a shita that's rejected. When we use the word kasha, it means, we have a problem here, but there's probably some sort of solution. We just haven't thought of anything good right now. But there is some sort of solution to this problem. The shita is not totally rejected. So since it's only in lashon of kasha, And he doesn't mention this, but also Hilsa Kishmul Bedini. So the default position, we'd always pass like Shmuel anyway. So therefore, we're not going to reject Shmuel Shita. But then the Rashbam rejects that idea. He says, no, you know what the difference between Tiyufta and Kasha is? Tiyufta is when the Kasha comes from a Brisa or a Mishnah. Kasha is when it comes from a statement of Amoraim. Over here, it's only from the statement of Amoraim, so we say Kasha. It doesn't mean it's any less rejected. We reject the Shita just as much when we say Kasha as we do when we say Tiyufta. It's just a question of where the question came from. So the Gilyon HaShas over here quotes from Be'er Sheva and Sanhedrin. I think he quotes from Be'er Sheva. He quotes from Ein Sanhedrin, Ein Beis. Whatever, he quotes a Gemara in Sanhedrin, but there's a Be'er Sheva that points to a Gemara in Sanhedrin that asks a Kasha from a Pasuk and says Kasha. He says it's Kasha and this Rashbam, because Rashbam says that no, when it's from something as strong as a Mishnah or a Brisa, we use a stronger Lashon of Tiyufta. When it's only from a Amoraim, we use the Lashon of Kasha. But when we see that it's from a Pasuk, and we use the Lashon of Kasha. So the truth is, it's not such a problem, because very often you have what Rashbam is not saying, that the Lashon of Kasha doesn't work for questions that come from a Mishnah. He's saying that the highest level of question you could ever have from an Amora is Kasha. The highest level of question you could ever have from a Brisa is Tiyufta. You could have Kashas from a Brisa as well, it's just not as strong of a Kasha. Okay, anyway, let's go weiter. That if the brother is known to have his own money, the guy whose name is on all the shtaros, so then he is believed to say that this came from him, and we assume that it's that he took this from his own money. He didn't say this is Meisasu Kimeitz. He said that he got it as Yerusha from Beis Aviima. So Tosfos points out, yeah, but we believe him with the Migo that he could have said this was from his portion, his dividends that he took from the estate, right? So we believe him to say that he got it from Avi Imo as well. Raya b'mai. So we said they have to bring a raya, right? Let's go within Rav that the Rashbam said we paskin like, right? Right. So Rav says that they have to bring a raya. How do you bring a raya, right? Says the Gemara, Rabba am a raya be'edim. You bring edim. Rav Sheish is am a raya b'kiyum ashtar. You mekayim the shtar, and that's the raya. Amalei Rav the Rav Nachman v'harav v'hashmuel harav v'harav sheishes command svirulei. You have the machlokas Rav and Shmuel within Rav. You have the machlokas Rav Nachman Rav Sheishes exactly. You have machlokas Rav and Rav Sheishes exactly what the raya is. So what are you paskin? A, do you paskin like Rav and Shmuel? And B, how do you paskin in terms of what the raya is? Amalei Anamas Nisi Adani says, I just know a brisa. The Tanya says in the brisa, if one of the brothers is the one whose name is on all the shtaros, he's in charge of the estate, and he says that this particular shtar belongs to him, and it's from his own maternal grandfather's estate, and has nothing to do with his brothers, I love the Havi Raya. He's the one that needs to bring the raya. So you have Beferish and the Brisa that way. Also, if a woman is running the household and all the shtaros that come out of that household have her name on it, and she says, this belongs to me, and this came from my grandfather's estate, she needs to bring a raya. So ask the Gemara, my v'chein, what's the v'chein, that the same is true by a woman? Well, what's the chiddush? Why would we think a woman would be any different? Says the Gemara, Mao detema isha kibin de shvichel amilsa, damri katarcha kami asmi, lo gazla mi asmi, kam ashmelon. I might have thought, what's the case of the woman? Her husband died. Her husband left all these children. Some of them are hers, some of them aren't. And she took it upon herself to be the adult who's going to run the finances, who's going to take care of the yisomim, who's going to make sure they have everything that they need, right? And now you're not going to believe her? You think she's going to be stealing from the yisomim? Here's a woman out of the goodness of her own heart decided to go out of her way to take care of these yisomim, and now you're going to accuse her of stealing from them? So I might have thought we would never make such an accusation, and therefore she should never have to bring a raya. We should automatically believe her if she says that a particular shtar belongs to her. Says the Gemara, Kamash Mlan, therefore it has to tell us that that's not so. Even she would have to bring a raya. Asks Tosos, would the Havamina be that she shouldn't have to bring a raya? She's more believed because she takes care of the Yisomim. The Gemara tells us elsewhere, the Gemara in Gittin says the exact opposite Svara. The Gemara in Gittin says that if a woman out of the goodness of her heart takes care of Yisomim, she's more likely to steal from them. Why? Because it's so much easier to justify to herself. All she'll say to herself is, these Yisomim, I do everything for them. I take care of them. I'm entitled to this. So it's so easy for her to justify it to herself. It's more likely that she's going to steal. How could our Gemara say that the Havamina is that it's less likely she's going to steal? So says Tosfos, no, the Havamina is that it's less likely that she's going to steal. Kamash Malan. That's why our Gemara has a Kamash Malan. The Kamash Malan is that since it's so much easier for her to justify it to herself, it's more likely that she's going to steal. Okay, we got to stop there, 6:55. So we'll pick up from the two dots tomorrow. Hopefully I'll have a voice back then.